Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, April the 26th. Do you have a child who is suffering from autism, ADHD, asthma, allergies? Well, if so, you'll certainly want to stay tuned. Our guest calls these new childhood epidemics the 4A disorders and says their rates have been skyrocketing over the past 20 years. One of these conditions affects one in every three children in America. Why is this, and are these children getting the very best treatment? Our guest says doctors have generally overlooked the connections among the 4A disorders, which he says appear to have been caused in part by modern toxins, nutritional deficiencies, genetic vulnerabilities, and the problems that all these factors can cause with our immune and gastrointestinal systems. And he has developed a program, a biomedical program, that includes nutritional therapy, diet changes and supplements, and medicine that he says is helping many children recover or improve. We'll talk about the causes and possible cures for the 4-H disorders this hour, and you can call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Kenneth Bach. He is the co-founder and co-director of the Rhinebeck Health Center and the Center for Progressive Medicine. He's also a clinical instructor in family medicine at the Albany Medical College. He is the author of the new book, Healing the New Childhood Epidemics, Autism, ADHD, Asthma, and Allergies, the groundbreaking program for the 4A disorders. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. Let's start with the scope of this problem. All four of these are epidemics?
Yeah, most definitely. If we look at the numbers, Joy, we're looking at increases in autism. These are conservative numbers in the last 20-plus years, from 1 in 2,500 to 1 in 150, and that's a statistic right from the CDC. Mm. That's a 1,500% increase right there. And then if you look at ADHD, conservatively 400% increase, asthma 300%, and allergies at least 400%. These are astronomical increases in a 20-year period.
Is it just because doctors are getting better at diagnosing these ailments?
No, that's something that's been suggested, and it's really clearly not that. In fact, there was a study done. The state of California keeps very, very good records of developmental disabilities, including frank autism. And they actually have shown, without a doubt, that it's not due to just better diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Some people have thought, well, maybe it's that kids that were quote mentally retarded in the old days are now called autistic. But that's not the case. If you look at the way it's increased, autism has rose exponentially in the 90s, and the others haven't really changed that much. I think it really is due to, unfortunately, modern times and some of the consequences of our technological advances, and the kids that are affected are probably these yellow canaries in the coal mines.
Yeah, well, like what? What in our modern times is poisoning our kids?
Well, I think if you look, I mean, there was a recent study last year. Well, first of all, the things are like we're looking at toxins, heavy metals, lead, mercury, arsenic, chemicals of all kinds. I mean, if you look at the number of chemicals that we have, there's over 85,000 chemicals, probably between 2,000 and 3,000 new chemicals every year, many, unfortunately, which have never been tested. And the part of the problem is even the ones that have been tested, you look at these toxic thresholds of individual chemicals. But the problem is that all of us, including our children, are being exposed much more to a toxic soup. In other words, multiple chemicals at lower levels than these toxic thresholds. But there's new research in the toxicology, neurotoxicology journals that talk about this negative synergistic effects. In other words, you put a few chemicals together and maybe some heavy metals at lower doses, not enough to cause toxicity of any individual one, but together they have these adverse effects. And I think what's happening is, unfortunately, you have these genetically vulnerable or susceptible kids with an impaired ability to detoxify the chemicals, coupled with, unfortunately, a lot of nutritional deficiencies if you look at the diets of our kids, we know there's at the same time we have this epidemic increase in obesity, there's an increase in fast foods, there's been an increase in trans fats, refined carbohydrates. All these things can lead to these kind of chronic inflammatory states that are one of the things that underlies the 4A disorders. So all these things, the toxins, the inability to detoxify, coupled with deteriorating nutrition, and I think our kids are a setup, and the ones that get affected are, when I say the yellow canaries in the coal mines, for the listeners who don't know what that is, the coal miners would go down, free these yellow canaries. If they lived, they knew there was enough oxygen. If they had problems or died, they knew they couldn't go there because they knew there wasn't enough oxygen. I think what we're seeing is kind of our more fragile, sensitive kids in certain periods of development that unfortunately are our yellow canaries.
Yeah. You did mention, though, that there is a genetic link, too.
Yes, and I think what's happened in the past has been an overemphasis on genetics. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of money spent, a lot of research, and nobody's really been able to find the, quote, genes that cause autism. But I think it's very important to recognize there is a genetic predisposition, no question, but that's not enough. It's the genetic predisposition plus environmental triggers or insults that result in what we call these phenotypes or the expression of all of these 4A disorders.
Yeah, so all of these are the causes for all of these or contributors to all
yes.
of these disorders.
Yeah, I would say contributors. And you know, the underlying mechanism really is toxins produce something called free radicals or oxidants. These are very damaging reactive molecules that affect cells and cell membranes and chronic inflammation. And if we look at a lot of the disorders, not only what I'm talking about in terms of the kids and the 4A disorders, but if we look at obesity in children, diabetes, childhood cancers, and then we look at adult illnesses, heart disease and atherosclerosis and diabetes and obesity, all these things more and more are being attributed to increased oxidative stress and chronic inflammation. So there really is a tie-in, not only among the 4As, but a lot of our chronic degenerative disorders.
What about the mercury preservative in vaccinations that I hear about on this program quite a bit from listeners who believe that that's why their son or daughter has autism?
Well, firstly, I want to emphasize that vaccinations are an important part of public health policy. There's no question about that. So I want to make sure that listeners know that as I answer that question, because there are many parents who do say that their children seemed to regress. And the most common type of autism we see now, if we stay with autism, is this regressive type. And the old, you know, years and years ago, when there were very few cases, many of them were from birth, may have been from a lack of oxygen or problems at birth or what have you. But the vast majority of the newer cases of this epidemic are what we call regressive, where a child was apparently normal or pretty normal for a year, year and a half, even, and then they regressed either fairly quickly or somewhat gradually over 1 or 3 months into an autistic spectrum disorder. So the vaccinations, unfortunately, there was a toxin in the vaccinations, thimerosal, which is a ethylmercury-containing preservative. And I believe during that period, especially in the early 1990s when they added two new vaccinations, the hepatitis B and the HIB, or Haemophilus influenza B vaccination, both containing thimerosal, that I believe that may have been the toxic tipping point for some of the children who were predisposed. In other words, sometimes when you have a predisposition, you have less reserve than the others without the predisposition, but you still can tolerate some. But I think by unfortunately adding that extra thimerosal in the doses they were added may have been the toxic tipping point. Thimerosal has been removed from most vaccinations. Unfortunately, it's still in a lot of flu vaccinations, so parents need to be aware of that. I myself don't believe that pregnant women and young infants and children should receive a flu vaccination with thimerosal. Without thimerosal is okay, but not with thimerosal. But that toxin's been removed from most of the other childhood vaccinations, and I think that's very, very helpful. But it's not just the mercury in vaccinations. There was a study that was done about emissions in Texas. They broke Texas down into small counties and school districts, and they looked at the rate of mercury emissions from the coal-fired power plants for each of the different counties, and then they plotted also that toxicity, and then they plotted the rates of autism. And lo and behold, there was an incredible correlation in the counties between the rates of mercury emissions in the air and the rates of autism. And I think that's showing this is an environmental issue. This is not a vaccination issue. I think it's an environmental issue, and it's not just the heavy metals. It's about lead in the environment. It's about all these chemicals now. We're seeing more and more use of pesticides, organochlorines, mm-hmm. organophosphates, all the polybrominated flame retardants. I mean, our kids are really getting exposed. Plasticizers, more and more chemicals as well.
Yeah, and we will get into your program, but you have some thoughts on how the medical establishment is currently treating all the children with these conditions?
Well, I think the problem has been is if you look in the diagnostic coding of these disorders, let's say especially, take autism, for instance, it's coded in the psychiatric journals. It's called the DSM-4. And it's basically been looked at as a psychiatric disorder, and therefore you treat it with behavioral therapy. Now, every one of my children who gets what I call biomedical therapy through me or some of my other colleagues needs to get behavioral therapy and educational interventions. These things go very well together. However, and there are certain medications that are sometimes needed to control really, really adverse behaviors, self-injurious behaviors, really heavy aggression. However, I think what has been missing is this looking at underlying root causes of what is contributing to autism and the other 4A disorders. And I think the good news is that we've been educating more and more physicians. I think the book is getting out and raising more awareness. And it's important. I was just in Cooperstown lecturing to physicians and then later on to parents. So trying to show them there's all this science. I can quote from literature, endless literature, more and more coming out, especially, that are talking about these issues. So it's very good science and very good journals. So the key is that we don't forsake the current treatments. Medications are helpful. Educational behavioral therapies are essential. But I think we need to go beyond and look at these underlying root causes. So if there is toxins, we need to detoxify the kids. If they have nutritional deficiencies, which many of them have, we need to replete those nutrients. And we need to help balance their metabolism because there's a lot of metabolic imbalances.
We're talking with Dr. Kenneth Bach. He is the author of the new book, Healing the New Childhood Epidemics, Autism, ADHD, Asthma, and Allergies. Have any questions for him? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon after 5 o'clock with Ben Marins, Ben and his guests will talk about both sides in the debate over the Iraq War funding bill, the one that includes a timetable, the one that the president says he'll veto. That's the discussion after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking with a guest who has come up with a program to help children who suffer from autism, ADHD, asthma, and allergies. And we're going to talk more about what he prescribes, and we'll welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Dr. Kenneth Bach is co-founder and co-director of the Rhinebeck Health Center and Center for Progressive Medicine. He's also a clinical instructor in family medicine at the Albany Medical College. His book is Healing the New Childhood Epidemics, Autism, ADHD, Asthma, and Allergies, the groundbreaking program for the 4A disorders. And let's just, you touched on what the major elements of your healing program are, but you do look into nutritional therapy. You want kids to eat healthier foods than they are eating.
Yeah, there's several different diets that we use, and I think one of the sine qua nones of their treatment is it's not a cookie-cutter approach. Mm-hmm. And there's no one-size-fits-all. I mean, I would say recommendations for diet would be, if possible, if a family can afford it, I would like to see them eat more organic foods to take them away from the pesticides and things like that that are in many of the foods. I'd like them to eat, if they could, free-range or more natural chicken, because it's been shown that in non-organic chicken there are higher levels of arsenic, which is a toxin. Stay away from mercury-laden fish, the big fish like tuna and swordfish and sea bass. As good as they may taste, unfortunately, they're higher in mercury. You don't want those. Very simple things like that. The more specialized diets, there's a gluten-free, casein-free diet. Gluten is the protein in grains like wheat and casein is the protein in dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the children will improve on a gluten-free, casein-free diet. Not all, so it's not one size fits all. But you can test for that. You can test for sensitivities to gluten. You can test for celiac disease. Unfortunately, a lot of the kids don't have frank celiac disease, and some of them don't even show sensitivities or allergies to it, but they actually react to this actually peptide. It's a very tiny protein-like substance that comes from these foods that becomes what a morphine-like substance in the body. So it's, we call it caseomorphines or gliadomorphines, and it's almost like, unfortunately, some of these kids are like stoned and they're addicted to the foods. So if you take them away, they might actually go through withdrawal. But when they come out of that, actually, they lose the glaze in their eyes. They may look at their parents for the first time, respond to their name being called, and sometimes utter their first word. So it can be quite profound. So it's something that we do. We usually do 3 weeks for a casein-free diet and 3 months for a gluten-free diet to see if there's some response. And like I said, a significant number of the kids will respond to that.
Yeah, we'll talk about other elements in your healing program, but we have full lines right now with listeners who want to talk with you. Cheryl in Sauk City is first. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was calling because we were recently exposed about 4 months ago to a pesticide that came in through a box from Target that was a gallon of ant and roach killer. Since then, we've continually had, especially I have a 14-year-old son, has had memory loss. He has had continued nervous problems. And I guess what we're wondering is that our house was tested now for VOCs, and they are very high, and we need to get those out of our home. We need to get him probably detoxified. And I guess the question I would like to know is, as far as pesticides being in his system, he was actually a very intelligent kid, actually rated very high at the Wisconsin State testing in eighth grade, and now he's been tested at Sylvan, and he has actually memory loss back to sixth grade. I would like to know, with this pesticide exposure, and it was an organic phosphate, a carbamate that was in these ant and roach killer, I would like to know if you can tell me what we could do to help him, because he's been to doctors, he is seeing a neurologist, but I guess I'm just floored at what I'm finding out what pesticides have done through the years to our children and how it is attached to the four A's.
Yeah, and you do have a detoxification recommendation in your program, Dr. Bach?
Sure, yeah, and this is a classic case. I think most likely, although he hasn't probably been tested for it, he may be somebody with what we call a genetic polymorphism or predisposition, so where his genes, especially the genes that code for enzymes that would be important for detoxifying organophosphates, may not be up to snuff. Doesn't mean he doesn't have it. It may mean they're not quite as functional, and that's why he may be more affected. But, yeah, there are ways to detoxify. One of the things that would be really crucial is to help to enhance his glutathione system. His glutathione, it's called a tripeptide, which means it's made of three amino acids. It's the cell's primary antioxidant and detoxifier. It detoxifies both chemicals and heavy metals. And a lot of the kids we see are low in glutathione, and they may be setups for more problems.
Yeah.
He may be low in glutathione. So
I'm losing you here. Glutathione is something that you would take as a supplement then, or what?
Yeah, well, either you take it, it's not very well absorbed. So glutathione, there are ways to enhance glutathione. One of the ways, so what you want to enhance the glutathione in the cell to help the cell detoxify from this kind of exposure. And, you know, we actually give it in our office intravenously for some kids who are low in it and who really need it, who are toxic. But you can enhance that status by antioxidants such as vitamin C, vitamin E, silymarin, which is a very important liver antioxidant, things like alpha-lipoic acid. And a precursor of glutathione is called N-acetylcysteine, NAC. And that can also enhance the levels. So, I mean, usually we test for these things, et cetera, but that's one thing to think about. And also the processes of methylation and sulfation, which I talk a lot about in the book. These, I know they're complex, but these are important cellular metabolic processes as well as detoxification processes. And very likely he may be low in some of these in terms of he may have some blocks in other enzymes that are important. So sometimes things like methyl B12, a special type of vitamin B12, and certain things that enhance sulfation.
Yeah. Are there, you know, are most doctors in line with detoxifying, doing some sort of you know, therapy like this on a child?
No, I think basically, unfortunately, in medical school, we don't learn much about detoxification. In fact, I think it has been relegated to kind of the fringe for years in terms of, like, practitioners doing coffee enemas and weird stuff. But the reality is, your liver is detoxifying you 24/7 in terms of exposure to what we call endogenous toxins, things that you create in your gut and things like that, as well as the outside toxins that we're always exposed to, even in the house and outside. So we never think about it until there's a problem like this. But there's much research behind the importance of detoxification and ways to do it. And you can find doctors. I have a website called 4-A, the number 4-ahealing.com. There's things about detoxification there. There's also a referral list to physicians around the country of doctors that at least have had an interest. Certainly, I can't vouch for every one of them. I don't know them, but at least have taken at least one conference, if not more, on some of these things. And we teach this to doctors. Like, we have the American College for Advancement in Medicine, or ACAM, an organization of integrative physicians, which I'm the president of now. We teach courses. Like, in 2 weeks in Chicago, we'll teach a heavy metal detoxification course. So there are places that doctors can learn. More and more doctors are learning this, which is great. And there are things you could probably do for your son. Obviously, I can't give you recommendations without seeing him, and no doctor could do that without testing him. But there are some general things that you can think of to enhance his detoxification status, because that's probably one of the things he's going to need.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for the call. Many other listeners waiting. So let me go to Robin in Wausau. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I will say from the beginning, I am a chiropractor, so I do have a holistic bent to this, but it is so refreshing to hear an allopathic medicine doctor talking about the things you are, because I think a lot of people are missing the point that all these toxins in our environment, including the mercury, are a component to this autism spectrum that we're seeing. I have patients that are vaccine injured. I have two nephews that have autistic or speech problems, and I feel they are from this. The one has Asperger's, which addresses the genetic component that you are speaking of, which I feel very strongly about. I will disagree with you on one point, and that is the vaccine issue. I feel a little bit more strongly about that. I do not advise my patients not to be vaccinated. However, I do give them websites and information to educate themselves so that they understand that there is a risk, because I don't feel that they are being adequately address that there is that risk. I'm excited about the idea of the testing to find genetic predispositions, because I do feel that is very much a part of that. As far as the vaccinations, up until recently when we removed the thimerosal, children were receiving 120 times the legal limit for EPA recommendations for mercury. So therefore, it really wasn't proven safe, and we've never had that study done. We also have studies that show, you know, just as a side note, the flu vaccine doesn't improve health for seniors or children, but a lot of parents aren't aware that the thimerosal is still present in the flu vaccine, as the doctor mentioned. So I'm very encouraged by the information, and I certainly will direct some of my patients toward his website. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Robin.
Michelle in La Crosse is next. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, good morning. I have a couple of questions for you, but I'll do the main one that I have calling for. I led up the behavioral modification programming. It's geared for children up to the age of 6. Basically, we are told that window of opportunity is really between the ages of 2 and 6 years old. If you're doing anything like behavioral modification, things such as ABA. My question to you is, I have a daughter that has autism. Her name is Shelley, and she's amazing, and she is 8 years old. Is the kind of therapies that you're talking about, things like gluten-free diets, things like biomedical interventions, are they geared for children, again, in that age group, the 2 to 6 years old, like we've been told in behavioral modification programming, or is it really geared for children of all ages, even children as old as my daughter?
That's an excellent question, Michelle, and I'm going to answer it in a couple of different ways. Firstly, there's no question that we like to get the children as young as possible. That's why we really are firm supporters of early diagnosis. And encourage, you know, families that have any questions about their kids' development or problems to get them diagnosed early and earlier. And there's a push to that now. There's an educational campaign about that, which is great because both behavioral therapies and the biomedical approach do work better, faster, with more of a chance of full recovery the younger they are. However, this is important, that it's not only a window of 2 to 6. We have kids coming in 8, 10. I have teenagers. I have adults 20s and 30s that can improve with this biomedical approach consisting of the dietary modifications, the supplementation, detox, and medications for inflammation, and sometimes there's a lot of new things that we're researching in the last 2 years. So there is hope for those. However, you have to recognize if the older a child is and when they get into adulthood, the more, if it is due to toxic influences, the more their neurons and brain cells have been exposed, you don't know exactly how far you're going to get. However, I have seen some nice results. I just had at a conference last week when I was lecturing, I had one of the parents of a patient who's like a junior or senior in high school, I can't remember which one, who has made high-functioning autism, more like an Asperger's, made significant improvement. The father was beaming to say the changes, and this kid's got to be, I think, what must be 16 or 17. So, yes, there are possibilities for the older kid. 8-year-old is not too old by far.
Yeah. So, besides that example, what evidence is there that your approach is helping children?
Well, the evidence is, number one, clinical. I mean, you can't mm-hmm. deny it. As you know, kids go through these programs. I have more and more kids who actually lose the diagnosis. And I'm not a developmental pediatrician. I'm board certified in family medicine, so I have all that done mm-hmm. by either developmental pediatricians and pediatric neurologists, and some of them will be at Mayo Clinic and other medical centers where they've had that diagnosis, and then they lose it. So that's proof in the pudding. It's not about only recovery. It's about improvement. We see kids improving, being mainstreamed, losing their AIDS, getting play dates with friends, being conversational. So the improvement can anywhere be from mild to moderate mark. Don't have anybody ever tell you that they're going to recover or help every child, because I don't think that's true. However, we're seeing the vast majority of the kids improve, more and more recover, and the research that's being done is providing more and more science to validate all that we're doing. So there's being more of a kind of a melding of the clinical experience with the underlying research to validate it.
Thank you, Michelle. Marianne in Kashina is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I was wondering if there was any correlation between a parent myself having celiac as a child, and my daughter is now diagnosed with autism. And then also, my second question you answered in the last, my daughter is 12. She was diagnosed before age 2, but it took about 6 physicians to make that diagnosis 10 years ago. And we tried the casein and gluten-free diet. We didn't really see any significant, for about 3 to 4 months, didn't see any significant changes. But, again, you did answer a lot of the questions in terms of she is 12 years old, and the impact that these detoxifications and dietary changes could make in her at this age. And she is also nonverbal.
Yeah, so there, you know, the gluten-free, casein-free is really the kind of first thing we do, but it's one of the more basic interventions. There are so many other things that need to be looked at, you know, certainly testing, and then interventions, basically targeted interventions. And I think with celiac, it's interesting because celiac is in essence an autoimmune type problem, a gluten sensitivity, and so it would have, you know, you would think that perhaps your daughter would have had a response. If she didn't, we need to look at other these areas.
So would there be a link that Marianne's parents had celiac disease with her child's autism?
Well, when you look at family histories, we'll see that there's a higher incidence of autoimmunity mm-hmm. and allergies in the parents and the family members of kids with autism, because there's a lot of immune dysfunction, a lot of immune dysregulation, either immune deficiencies or autoimmunity or allergies and hypersensitivities. That's one of the tie-ins in the terms of the links. So you would look at that, and you always take that into consideration. But, you know, here you go. You see that her mother had celiac, and she did not respond. And if it was a strict gluten-free, Marianne, that's the key, that for those at least 3 months it was very, very strict, then these kids are very complex metabolically, and it's not always straightforward. So obviously you have to look in other directions besides the gluten-free diet in this case.
Thanks, Marianne, for the call. We will take more calls with your questions for Dr. Kenneth Bach. He is the author of Healing the New Childhood Epidemics, Autism, ADHD, Asthma, and Allergies, the groundbreaking program for the 4A disorders. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen and her guests will be talking about current issues going on in Washington. And she'll also be talking with her guest, Milton Coleman, who is Deputy Managing Editor of The Washington Post, a little bit about his life and work, as he is a Wisconsin native who is being honored by the Milwaukee Press Club. And Kathleen will talk to him a little bit about that, too. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. Our Spring Pledge Drive starts next week, May 3rd, and right now we are encouraging you to go online and make your pledge before the drive even begins, because that will help shorten our pledge drive. Members have already contributed more than $9,000 toward our goal of $275,000. When the goal is reached, the drive will end. And we are told if we reach the $275,000 goal by May 3rd, we won't even start the pledge drive. So let's see if we can do that. WPR.org, pledge online, and you can check out our progress toward the goal. We are talking with Dr. Kenneth Bach about his book, Healing the New Childhood Epidemics, and he's telling us about his healing program for autism, ADHD, asthma, and allergies, called the 4A disorders. And Maddie in Wapaka is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple questions and a comment, if possible. one question is, do you believe in chelation? And also, the second question is, how can a person locate a doctor who thinks and treats the way that you do in your local, in like our local area?
Those are two questions. Did you have a comment?
Yes.
I'm counting.
Yes. on Tuesday, there was a large gathering, 750 people to 1,000 people gathered in Madison at the Capitol to encourage the legislators to approve funding from insurance companies for early treatment of autism, behavioral treatment through the WEAP program. It's WEAP is Wisconsin Early Autism Project, and there's a long waiting list of children, and my grandson will have to wait a year and a half before he'll be treated, and he was just diagnosed last year at the age of 5.
Oh.
And they say it's important to be treated as soon as possible, so I hope that people will contact their legislators and encourage to endorse this program.
Yeah, thank you very much, Maddie, for the call. We have had some news stories on that state issue. It's insurance funding for early treatment for autism. Dr. Bach, response?
Maddie, firstly, I completely and 100% support and endorse that whole issue of early of funding for early diagnosis and early treatment, both behavioral and really also biomedical. I'd like to see insurance companies cover that and make it more affordable for patients, because they both help. But it's true. I'd hate to see, is it your son or grandson, did you say?
My grandson.
Yeah, your grandson have to wait a year and a half, because it's lost time. And I think that it's really important that we get more and more funding to allow the kids to be treated as soon as possible. In terms of the other answers, firstly, in terms of location of physicians, there are two sites. On the 4A Healing site, 4ahealing.com that I spoke about, and that's the number for, there's a referral list of what's called Defeat Autism Now, or DAN practitioners. Again, I can't vouch for everyone. I'm just putting the list up as it's listed on the internet, and there's at least a chance that they would have a bent towards this kind of approach. And also this group of physicians called ACAM, A-C-A-M, at acam.org. There's also a list of physicians who have this more integrative medicine approach that may include this kind of approach.
Yeah. So that would, and your website again is 4-A-healing.com.
Yes.
And what about chelation?
Chelation. Well, chelation is probably one of the most controversial parts of this program. But however, it's actually one of that's very, very important. The Autism Research Institute, based out in San Diego, California, has surveyed thousands and thousands, many thousands of parents over the last many years for all the different interventions for autism: diet, supplements, medication, detoxification, chelation therapy. And actually, so this is not a scientific study, so but it's, you know, it's thousands of parents' responses, either saying this helped, this didn't help, or this caused side effects, so adverse effects. And of all the interventions, of which there are many, chelation therapy actually was the top rated at about 75%. So, and I think clinically, I and my colleagues who do this see improvement in kids who have evidence of heavy metal burden. The controversial thing is that these kids are not heavy metal toxic by the nature of certain blood levels, because what's happening is the toxins leave the blood and move into the tissue. So if you check, let's say, a lead level, you won't see a lead level above 10, which is, quote, the toxic level or the threshold nowadays. But they, if you give them, if you take a urine and you give them a chelating agent and you follow up another urine after 6 hours after the chelating agent, lo and behold, sometimes you see enormous amounts of lead coming out, and mercury and arsenic and aluminum and other heavy metals. So these kids have what we call a heavy metal burden. And there's more and more research in the last few years, especially about lead, but we also know that there's really no safe threshold, that kids with levels of 1 or 2 can have adverse effects on their IQ, on attention, on mood regulation, even with levels that are below 10. And these are scientific studies. I have these when I lecture. I have the studies cited. So this is important to recognize, that there's really no safe threshold for these heavy metals, because they do no good in the body. All they do is they poison enzymes, they poison metabolism. And so if you can help to relieve, to eliminate, to have the kids excrete these heavy metals through their urine, you're doing them a great service. We can do that naturally with some of the sulfating agents, the methylating agents, glutathione, but also through pharmaceutical chelators like DMSA and calcium EDTA, although the latter would be, I would say, more controversial in the conventional medical realm.
Maddie, thank you for the call, and good luck to you and your grandson. Lynn in Brookfield, hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question, Dr. Bach. I have a grandson, and he is ADD. He's 8 years old, and still is bedwetting. No problems during the day, only at night. And my daughter-in-law read an article where a doctor suggested taking away foods with that have food coloring for 6 weeks, trying that first, and then trying taking away sugar for 6 weeks. My concern is that she will be trying all these things without any indication, any testing or whatever, to know if what kind of toxins.
Well,
any advice?
Yeah. Well, and it's called enuresis, which is bedwetting at night, is relatively common, and it can be troublesome because obviously it can prevent sleepovers and things with kids because they don't want to wet other kids' beds and things. So it's something that we look at, and there are many things that can cause that. Food coloring. Possibly. We think of food sensitivities and potentially atypical allergic responses in some kids. But we also try to, sometimes it can be hormonal imbalances and the things that you can give to try to balance some of the hormones. But we usually do some testing to make sure that all of their systems are replete in terms of also nutrients and things. So it's not going to hurt the child to remove foods with food coloring and sugar. But I would think they may have to go another step and actually get some testing to look for food allergies and sensitivities and maybe some of the other things that I've spoken about. It's not always easy, but if you stay with it, a lot of times you can find the cause and you can remove the offending agent or maybe help to replete some of the things that are depleted. Sometimes you can resolve that issue.
Boy, I'm surprised that a limiting sugar was just proposed, because I thought that a lot of parents, especially parents of children that have ADHD, already do that. It's considered a common aggravator of it.
Well, I know it is in certain circles. Certainly, conventionally, it actually is not. It's been refuted, but I think that, as I said, in terms of the general guidelines for all these kids, when I talk about organic foods, also eliminating refined carbohydrates and sugars is something that I really think is in the best interest of the health of all the kids with the 4A disorders.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lynn. Jason and Nina, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my son has juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm wondering what the doctor thinks about his program and if he thinks it can help him. And another thing I'm wondering about is he has chronic inflammation because of his, you know, JRA. Yesterday we got some steroid injections at the university in Madison. My other option, according to the doctors, was methotrexate, Amen. This cancer treatment drug. So it seems like to me that I'm, by listening to recommendations, giving my son medications that might be damaging him in ways that I can't see right now. And I want to find the underlying cause of this, because it's supposed to be genetic, but we don't have any history in our family.
Well, let me answer that, because I think that JRA is another condition that fits very well with this approach. It's clearly not just genetic. There are some type of triggers for JRA. And what I really would want to impress is that that's clearly a classic chronic inflammatory condition. You're getting treated with one of the most potent of anti-inflammatories and steroids. Methotrexate is the other conventional treatment for severe JRA. But what I would propose is that you look for, and you need to do this in the concert with a physician, what is driving that inflammation? And usually I say it's one of three things, if not a combination of them: toxins, infections, and allergens. And a lot of times in these autoimmune type things, there are infections, hidden infections that have to be looked at, whether they be viruses, whether they be fungi like yeast, whether they be bacteria. So it takes a workup to look. You have the diagnosis. Now you got to get beyond the diagnosis and say, okay, what is driving the inflammation? And then you can come up with treatments that may then hopefully help to prevent him from having to go on methotrexate or get some more steroid injections.
You might have to have a 5A,
that's somebody said that that's something else as well.
Well, Jason, thank you very much for the call. George in Barneveld, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, doctor. I just wanted to ask a quick question about lawn chemicals that a lot of people use and if there's any correlation that's been found with any effects on their kids.
Yeah, I have concerns about lawn chemicals, because the kids go out and play in the lawn, so they're right in there. So that's a pretty can be a fairly intense and prolonged exposure. And again, you probably won't see problems in most of the kids who can fortunately detoxify these things. But in that subset of kids who have impaired detoxification, you may see problems, and they may be subtle. And that's one of the problems, that there may be subtle problems. And if somebody is going to use lawn chemicals, and I think there are more natural ones that can be applied, you'd like to enhance the detoxification mechanisms. And again, there are ways to try to ensure that the glutathione is at more optimal levels. I want to add something that's really important, especially for kids, is that Tylenol actually will decrease glutathione levels, so that if your kid's going to get certain exposures, and if your child got a vaccination with thimerosal, like in the flu vaccination, which I'm not recommending at all, but if that happened and you give Tylenol, you'll decrease the glutathione, which is important in terms of protecting against that thimerosal mercury, just like it's important in helping to detoxify the lawn chemicals. So you'd want to make sure that your child's glutathione status was intact and as best as possible. And just be aware of that. I think it's very important. So if a kid gets a fever after, like, a vaccination, I would recommend they take more like a Motrin or ibuprofen rather than Tylenol in that situation.
Yeah, and there's no concern over, the conditions that what about aspirin?
Well, aspirin, there are, any of these medicines have potential side effects.
Yeah.
However, you have to look at both sides of the coin, and I think for these kind of chemical and heavy metal exposures, it's very important not to interfere with the glutathione mechanism of detoxification.
I guess parents are told, I'm not sure if those other anti-inflammatories are of the same concern that aspirin is of causing RISE syndrome.
Well, that usually RISE would be with the illness, I'm pretty sure. In other words, if you get a certain type of viral illness, you have to be careful about aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, see, this is all about balance, Joy. This is the problem. That's why it's so complex. Dealing with these kids is extremely complex because we're always dealing with issues that one thing may go one way and the other thing may go just completely opposite way, and you have to somehow rectify these things.
Janelle in McFarland is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm just going to talk to my doctor about Asperger's next week, actually. I have been reading about it, and I've been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, Crohn's disease. I'm HLA-B positive. I have chronic inflammatory arthritis and iritis, all that good stuff. And also I'm diagnosed with bipolar, which I'm wondering if there's any connection, because I've thought that my mental deterioration, which has been intense, especially over the last couple of years, I always assumed that it was due to the bipolar, but as I'm reading about Asperger's, I meet all the criteria. I was exposed to pesticides as a child. I was allergic to milk as an infant, and my IQ just feels like it's dropped dramatically this past year, and I'm just curious if there's any relation to other mental disorders.
Very much so. I mean, you talk about bipolar, some of the tie-ins with that, and actually I think a lot more. Kids, how old are you, Janelle?
I am 28.
Yeah, okay.
And this is things started when I was about 16, 18.
Right.
And just the past 5 years, it's gotten really bad.
So, I mean, the kind of links in terms of from a nutritional perspective is omega-3 essential fatty acids tend to be helpful in a number of these disorders, a lot of the 4A disorders, as well as bipolar. And, you know, you talk about a chronic inflammatory condition, again, with arthritis and iritis, and I've seen many people that, again, you want to look at what is driving the inflammation. And you had a history of pesticides when you were younger, an allergy to milk. So these are kind of red flags. Okay, is there something still going on that may be manifesting in a different way now, contributing to not only maybe your Asperger's and the whole cognitive impairment that you're experiencing, as well as the chronic inflammatory arthritis and iritis and bipolar. I mean, so there are things that can tie these things together, and that's where you want to get to the underlying root causes.
Yeah, and we'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Lots of interest in your program, Dr. Bach. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Joy, for having me.
Dr. Kenneth Bach, author of Healing the New Childhood Epidemics, Autism, ADHD, Asthma, and Allergies. The groundbreaking program for the 4A disorders. More information on his website, 4-ahealing.com. 4-ahealing.com. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and Leo Duran for producing this program. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.